Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the River Avenue Blues Podcast. I'm Joe Polakowski. I am joined today by Jade Gordon, as always, and also a RAB regular, Sungmin Kim. How are you guys doing today?
It's cold outside.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely cold. How's it going, everyone? This is Jay, and we're back again with another attempt at making sure that we have a cadence that keeps you all with us at this podcast. We got a lot of cool response online, and we really appreciate people's excitement with us coming back to doing this on a more regular basis. So as long as the season actually starts with players playing, we'll keep talking about the Yankees. But right now, it doesn't seem like anybody's kind of interested in signing contracts.
No, it's been really a shame, too, because there's so many free agents out there, and all we're getting like little nibbles like, hey, Eric Hosmer has a really good offer. Okay, well, you know, that's not really doing it for me. So, you know, we're kind of in waiting mode, and especially with the Yankees, and Brian Cashman appears to absolutely be in wait-and-see mode. It doesn't seem like there's any urgency to get anything done right now. So, you know,
it feels that's the whole league right now. Everybody seems to be in wait-and-see.
Yeah, but I feel like other teams, there's more urgency than there is for the Yankees. I don't feel as though they have anything that's like, they could go into the season right now just as they are, and they'd be fine. They could obviously stand to upgrade, but you know, if they went into the season as they did right now, you'd have to call them the AL East favorites, I think.
I would believe so. I mean, even when you have Sale and Price, I still don't believe that their offense is quite enough to kind of stand up against what the Yankees can put out there. The Yankees offense is so formidable that it kind of hides some of the pitching deficiencies that you see in the starting rotation, which aren't very many.
No, I guess it's only that once you get past the five guys they have now, you know, you're getting into the more of the wild cards, like the Chance Adamses of the world, the Domingo Acevedos, where, you know, they're not exact, you know, it's not like they're totally MLB ready. These guys will be up at, you know, these guys could open the, you know, crack the roster on opening day. They're not exactly those kind of prospects right now. So
yeah, big arms, big, yep. Big arms.
Love the but big just, arms.
Just, oh yeah. That, I mean, if there's anything that we saw that Denbo and Cashman really put ahead of everything when it came to acquiring pitching in the minor leagues, it was big, big arms that throw hard. They just love their big, hard-throwing kids that they've got now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, the one thing Mike wrote about yesterday, well, yesterday being Wednesday, today we're recording on Thursday, was the possibility of trading for Josh Harrison. It's not the first time we've heard about this. You know, when the Yankees had the Garrett Cole rumors around the winter meetings, you know, Josh Harrison's name came up as a possible add-in to the trade. John Heyman wrote a column, I think about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, about other teams that where Harrison would be a fit. You know, the idea being that the Pirates have a couple decisions to make this offseason in terms of whether they think they can actually contend next year or whether they're better off reloading for a 2019 run. And, you know, Harrison, he's not cheap. He's not expensive by most standards now. But, you know, he's got 3 years of control left at, let's say, late arbitration levels. And kind of fits with the Yankees because he can play multiple infield positions. And, you know, again, it's exactly what we were talking about before, where it's a situation where Cashman doesn't need to make that move, so he can kind of wait for that trade to come to him.
Interesting. You know, he's had, you know, a 3-3 WAR in 2017, batted .272, 16 home runs. He seems like a guy that could, you know, make up for some of the production that you saw out of Starlin Castro, which we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that all you really need to do is produce maybe half of what you got out of Starlin Castro at second base from Gleyber Torres, and it feels like it's a win. Third base is a whole other situation, and I think that Harrison probably fits well on that third base spot. But you know, the question is that how much time do you want to commit to a third baseman right now?
I have no problem committing any amount of time. Who's the next guy in line for third base?
That's a question that I'm trying to answer myself, and I'm really uncertain. And I don't know if there's an anointed quite the system. It could be Anduar, it could be Gleyber himself, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and again,
Sonny,
I'm not gonna.
Sonny, yeah, I just wanted to ask Sonny. Sonny, you pay attention a lot to the kids in the minor leagues. I know you do a lot of reading and just keep things. What is your thought on the third base situation right now?
Well, okay, so to answer the question, I think if they want to get someone from the farm system, it would have to be Miguel Andujar, because it seems that Gleyber is headed to second base. But Andujar's issue is with his polish, or a little lack thereof, in defense. And when you play the hot corner, you want someone with a good glove on it. So the Yankees would like to see him make a big improvement with his glove for spring training or in the minors before he gets promoted. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that Harrison will be a pretty good 1 or even 2 year solution, a short-term solution for the third base. He is in his prime and he is cheap. And honestly, he has a pretty decent bat because of course the baseballs are playing out of the ballparks last year. He's power production also increased, and because he's not a guy who really draws a lot of walks, so once his bat skills decline, then his value is gonna tank. But so it'll be good to have him in his prime.
Well, and it's really interesting because you look at his contract, and actually, you're not buying a lot. He's set up in 2018 to make a sizable amount of money. He's gonna make $10,250,000. But the next 2 years after that, 19 and 20, those are team options with buyouts. So those that $1 million buyout basically sits there and allows you to make decisions about 2019 and your payroll, baby, that committing to a kid may not be quite as easy to do. Because if you're just committing to a kid, you're not really solidifying the position. And if you're not sure what kind of production you're going to get out of them, you're going to have to go out and spend the money anyway. So why not take the 1 year that you know you're guaranteed, mm-hmm. two more years that you've got options on, and really allow, you know, Gleyber to take one spot, which is second base, just entrench Harrison at third and be done with it.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'd add to that is, you know, again, Harrison is essentially, you know, I guess he's got 1 year left and the two options at around $10 million, $10-11 million. You know, the question is, what can he get Todd Frazier for? You know, he's going to be sitting on this market, you know, unless Hosmer and Martinez signing really moves the market along. He's going to be sitting there until the beginning of February. You know, what can you get him for? And wouldn't you rather just sign him for money than trade for Harrison?
I probably would agree with you there too. It really only comes down to something we talked about last time, is what is he going to do if he can't get anything more than a 1 year, $10 million deal from the Yankees? You know, because you know he's out there looking for that three year deal right now, yeah. At the least a 3 year, because he's at that point of age where you can't start just taking 1 year deals.
No, not at all. But if it's him for money for 2 years and $20 million or trading for Harrison, I'm taking Frazier.
I'd buy that, sure.
Yeah, I would also do Frazier. I mean, his power is pretty. I mean, his glove and his power. That's a big value to the team and I guess for himself.
Yeah, I was impressed by his glove. I mean, it was a surprise to me when he came over that they moved Headley, who has a great reputation with the glove. You know, moved him off a third, but I was completely impressed by Frazier's play out there.
The only thing that's really interesting is the fact that, you know, that batting average is just absolutely abysmal. And one of the things that was really actually nice to see was the Yankees having some high average players. A lot of big contact. And you know from two guys, there's going to be a ton of strikeouts coming. So the one thing that I would really caution against are low contact kind of position players. I think that you're going to have to kind of find someone that comes in like Starlin that, you know, is going to give you somewhere near that 300, somewhere between the two positions. It's going to be really hard to replace that only because you know how many more strikeouts are coming. It's just it's coming with the package of acquiring Giancarlo Stanton and then having him in the lineup with two other just monstrous batters that also strike out a hell of a lot in Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge. But and now Stanton. You think about – go ahead. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, Stanton – that's what I said. Stanton, Judge, Sanchez. I mean, you're going to get a ton of strikeouts because obviously the benefit of all the home runs they're going to hit. But, you know, you're going to lose some men on base if you're not getting regular contact from some players. And that's the only thing that really scares me about Frazier. He does walk a bit, and that helps.
You know what's interesting, though? His on-base percentage last year – 344 is looks like that's his career high. In fact, his walk rate bumped
to
14.4% as opposed to his career average at 8.9. So maybe because he realized that he's a low contact hitter, he's learning the new tricks at this stage of his career.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, he walks, and that's the one thing that I do feel could be the only upside there is that if he makes he gets his walks and he's consistent, it could make up for the lack of the hits. But there's really a lot to be, you know, desired when the slugging's at 462 at third base. You know, that's a tough one to kind of swallow. But that's what they're kind of projecting for him in 2018. So, you know, I still would like to see a little bit more out of third base, but We're going to have to kind of still see because they're in such a transitionary period and we know that. And that's what this kind of like last 2 years have been about, is watching how they fill gaps.
Yeah. Cashman has been doing that pretty well in my estimation for a number of years now.
Now, speaking of filling some gaps, it's been some gaps in time, Sonny, where you've been kind of out and about in the world. Let's just kind of catch up with you. You've been writing a lot. Who are you writing for aside from River App Blues lately?
So lately, at this moment / the past few weeks, I have been working on a chapter for the Baseball Prospectus 2018 annual.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm writing a chapter about Korean baseball, and I think this year they have people contributing for different leagues. So I heard that there will be a Japanese baseball chapter as well. I heard there's going to be a Cuban baseball chapter, so I'm excited for that as well.
Yeah, it sounds like they're trying to find new angles into you know, getting people excited about this information, and Korean baseball's definitely, if I can say anything, you've really helped popularize online a lot of the personality of Korean baseball.
Because I don't have a lot to do besides.
Oh, I know that, but I think
laptop,
but I'm just saying that here in North America, and I can speak for myself that, you know, we're fairly removed from, you know, media coverage of Korean baseball, and I think that what we don't realize is it seems like they have a hell of a lot of fun out there, based on what you've shared. So I just want to say, like, if you don't follow Sonny on Twitter, tell him how to follow you.
Go to twitter.com and find my account. It's at sung_min_kim. So it's sung_min_kim.
I do wonder if there's anybody out there who follows either me or you, Jay, and doesn't follow Sonny at this point.
Well, I know. You know,
I know.
We'll make sure that regardless of what we got, we'll get it a part of the tweet when we send it out for the episode. So everybody will make sure that we make get you some new followers so they can kind of pay attention to what's been going on in Korean baseball and what's going on with you in general. I know you've been back here in the States for a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure to have you. I know we're gonna be having brunch this weekend with some of what we like to call Yankees Twitter, a bunch of us who have kind of known each other for a while. So it's really cool that you're back in town, and we really do appreciate having you part of what we do. And thanks for coming on today. We're gonna take some questions that we got from the internet. I'm gonna read one first, and then we're gonna do an audio one. So you boys ready, Joe?
Oh yeah, I'm always ready for questions.
All right. So the first one comes from a very very dedicated RAB fan, Sam. And Sam says, "Hi all. A point often raised in regards to the Yankees bullpen is that the righties are so good against lefties. It shouldn't matter if they don't have much of a left-handed presence in the pen. However, with the lineup as it currently stands, I'm reading a lot of complaints with how right-handed it is. With Gardner, Bird, Hicks, and Didi all hitting from the left side, is it actually an issue? And if so, does it give Wade a leg up in the infield race? Thanks, Sam." Hey, Sam, thanks a lot. We appreciate the question. So what do you guys think? You know, bullpens, I think that lefty-righty thing, it's a really different animal. And I think it's because splits tend to be so extreme as compared for batters. What do you guys think?
I am so prepared for this question. I read the question before we got on. I have baseball reference tabs open and everything. And let me tell you, it is such a non-issue for this Yankees team because, you know, I guess the main issue, the implied issue here, is that the three best hitters on the team are all right-handed. So more than likely, I mean, you could throw Greg Bird in the middle of Sanchez, Stanton, and Judge if you wanted to. I wouldn't throw Didi in the middle, really, and you're going to back Gardner at the head of the lineup. So you're probably going to go 2-3-4 or 3-4-5. With Stanton, Sanchez, and Judge, though, Jay, you had brought up the idea of batting Bird third and splitting them up, which isn't the worst idea. But, you know, going back to the point that, you know, their three best hitters are right-handed, but they don't really have any platoon splits to speak of. It's a tougher read on Judge and Sanchez because we really have one-year data on them. But Judge hit better against righties than he did lefties, and Sanchez was so close in splits as to be, you know, is to not really have him at all. Stanton does have a platoon split, but it's, you know, last year he had a 950 OPS against righties. So it doesn't matter what his split is at that point. He still crushes righties. So I don't think it's any problem whatsoever. I don't think the Yankees need to make any special considerations, to add a lefty to one of the vacancies. They could add literally anyone to those vacancies and it wouldn't affect lineup balance at all in my estimation.
Hey guys, my name is Julian, and I was wondering if what your guys' opinions were on Eric Kratz taking over as Austin Romine for the backup job. Now, I might be a little biased because I went to college with him, or the same college as him, and he even works out in the same gym as me, but I think he has some pretty decent pop. I mean, he's got career home runs against Wade Davis, Craig Kimbrell, even Aroldis Chapman, and even Madison Bumgarner and David Price and people like that. So he's got good pop. And I was wondering if maybe he is a better option than Austin Romine. Thanks again, guys. Keep up the good work.
I mean, sure, he's homer dog against some of the bigger pitchers, but, you know, we look at his career numbers and it's not really, it doesn't really jump out at you.
No, and I think it's the overall point is a lot of guys are going to get lightning in a bottle. I mean, we were just talking today. Well, Ben was just talking today about the Benji Molina home run off AJ Burnett in the 2010 playoffs. And guys are going to catch lightning in the bottle on that all the time. I don't dislike Eric Kratz, and I really don't. I do dislike Austin Romine. I just don't think that's a viable full season path forward.
I think Eric Kratz and I are about the same age. And I think that, you know, that probably doesn't bode well for him being the backup catcher. So, to the person who left the message, I'm sorry that you're probably about as old as I am if you went to college with Eric Kratz. No offense, but I mean, I know he just re-signed a minor league deal. I think they really just signed him to go down to AAA and help out. You know, when you're a veteran kind of guy, you go down there mostly to help out kids, and obviously play and get the opportunity to come up when someone is busted up. And I'm fairly certain that they'll find somebody to take that spot, or it's just going to be Austin Romines again.
Yeah, and I mean, and think about it this way too. You know, Tagashioka and what Eddie Rodriguez are the catching depth in the upper minors. They definitely need someone to kind of fill in there.
Yeah, Kratzel will help with, especially with the kids, guys like, you know, Sheffield and of that ilk, and basically get them maybe to how to do their work like a major leaguer. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And for what it's worth, which is not much, he's been around some really good pitching staffs. He was with the Phillies in the early 2010s when they had Halliday, Lee, Oswald, and all those guys. And then later he was...
Yeah, that Cleveland team too, he nothing to spit at.
And then he was with the Royals when the Royals were really good. One day, and I think he has a ring with them in 2015.
Yeah, I think he's just got age that's not on his side, unfortunately, in this situation. All right, so the next question came to us via email, and it's from a worried Yankees fan. I know everyone is super excited for the kids to lead next year, as well as start the Yankees' next dynasty. But there will most likely be a sophomore slump or three, no? Not to be a Debbie Downer here, but where do you see, if you see it all, hitting the hardest? Or who do you see, I guess, hitting the hardest? You know, and that came from Dan, the worried Yankees fan. Dan, that's a really, really hard question to answer, because one of the biggest problems that most players have is bouncing back from success and understanding how to continue being successful year to year. Would you guys agree?
Oh, absolutely. There's always fluctuation performance, especially for guys who have monster years like Judge and Sanchez.
And there's so many expectations that have already been put on these guys' heads after what they did in the last, you know, the end of the 2016 season, the beginning of what they started last season as well, that you kind of have to wonder, like, are these expectations to start a dynasty and start winning right away something I think that are just fan perceived, or do you really see that the organization has that kind of pressure now?
Oh, yeah, you don't go through last season the way they did and have the success they did with their player development system and not put the expectations to win. You know, again, it hasn't been World Series or bust for the last few years, but I feel like, you know, we're back there this year.
Yeah. You
know, the expectation is to win the World Series this year.
I kind of have to start to agree that they've really positioned themselves that, you know, it's hard to look at where they have the payroll and look at the people that they added and say, you know, a championship isn't, you know, the best case scenario. It's the only scenario that you could hope for.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and they're going for it long term. I know that, you know, it's the owner. The owners are trying to make money, so the resetting the luxury tax. But it does allow them to, you know, continue growing. You know, continue growing the team, continue adding payroll, and not getting taxed at 50% above the luxury tax limit. So, I mean, there's no guarantee. They might just, you know, get below the tax rate, pocket the difference, and then, you know, not go above it in the coming years. That's obviously a possibility. But, you know, it just seems like the timing lining up this way, it seems like they're really poised to, you know, not only contend this year, but figure out what holes they have to fill next year. There's a lot of, you know, really high-end free agents coming up next year. So they have an opportunity to further the investment in the team and, you know, build that vaunted, you know, 90s dynasty.
I think it is important to note that with young players, you have to see beyond a one-year result. Mm-hmm. So, sure, maybe someone like Didi or Judge could have some kind of slump in 2018. But remember, I mean, the thing is that they're not really... finished products, and if I had to choose someone that could have like a little underwhelming season, Judge has a clear flaw in his hitting game, which is strikeouts, and we saw him struggle at the plate around July and August last year. But even if he has a season that's not as good as he was in 2017, I think he will still put up a really good season.
Yeah, and they got kind of Stanton as backup. So
yeah, I was just going to say, I think they're really well rounded.
Literally exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing that this Yankees team provides as compared to the ones that we remember maybe from about 2011 till about 2015. Those teams were so poorly constructed as far as like balance. If one or two guys went into slumps, it killed productivity throughout the entire lineup, and it was brutally obvious.
Bobby Abreu, 2007.
Yeah, well, obviously. But I'm just thinking about recent times where there was a lot of age on the team, and that age also showed how the idea of the player, like Mark Teixeira, was still kind of valued over the real production of the player. So they still put these guys in the third and the fourth spot, and when they slumped and the other players who weren't quite as good weren't doing as well either, you saw the pain. And I just don't see that kind of comparison in this 2018 team. I just don't see that like top heavy lineup that if that guy doesn't hit, you're dead in the water. All right, so Joe, do you want to finish it off maybe with one more audio question, and then we'll wrap up things today?
Yep, and I got a short one coming up.
Hey, River Rat Blues. My question to you is, as free agency is starting to pick up, hopefully, maybe, what's Cashman and the Yankees' biggest priority? Veteran infielder to play second and third, or a back-end rotation arm in order to protect against injury? Thank you, and hopefully baseball season comes sooner than later.
All right, so that gets into kind of what we were talking about before. We talked a lot about the second and third base vacancies, and it kind of I guess we don't have to spend a ton of time on this question because, Jay, we talked about this last week. Mm-hmm. But to answer Rob's question, I think the starting pitcher is their biggest free agency need right now, or free agency or trade. I think that it's something that it's not only that, it's not like a six-man rotation thing. It's that, everyone's going to need a rest at some point or another. The Yankees have really timed out giving Tanaka extra rest with a lot of effectiveness in the last couple of years. Giving CeCe extra rest. Again, he's, 38 this year? So
yeah, and Jordan Montgomery is still a very, very young pitcher, and only going into his second season, you don't know where that innings that you thought you were going to get from, I guess, Pineda last year. You always try to hope that you can get 200 innings, I suppose, out of each person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing that I'm trying to piece together is where of those 200 innings coming together, mm-hmm, in that fifth spot in the rotation that's consistent. And that's going to be a big question that I think that Brian Cashman is going to, I think, probably answer within the next few weeks, only because there's so much out there.
Yeah, there's tons of opportunity. And, to your point about getting the innings is how gassed are Severino and Montgomery going to be, coming off seasons where they worked harder than they have ever worked in their entire lives? That was their seasons, maybe less so Montgomery because he didn't pitch much once they got into October. But he did pitch more, again, minor leaguers are used to 5-month seasons, not 6-month seasons, and his workload is a bit heavier. And we all know that the stress level at the major leagues is much higher than the minors. But, especially Severino, who not only worked more innings than he ever has in his entire life, but pitched 7 months of the year, not including spring training. So, how gassed is he going to be coming into next year, and how is that going to affect, his ability to make a start every fifth day?
It's also worth mentioning that Severino exited one of his ALCS starts with a shoulder scare.
Yeah, that was weird too, because he came back and pitch really well the next time out.
Well, you know, you can never really tell. They're never always pretty forthright with what was wrong with someone. And I think that the shoulder thing was just a precautionary. Yeah. You never could tell. But I think that the extra position player is something that easily comes to you late in spring training anyway. Teams start really looking at veteran position players and making decisions on where they fit and don't fit in their organization. And I think that you could see people becoming readily available to kind of be that backup second, third base person that can maybe work alongside with Torres. So I really don't see that as a priority. I think with Joe and Sonny have kind of leaned in is it's definitely starting pitching. Somewhere to get that extra 200.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us to wrap up another episode of the River Avenue Blues podcast.
Doesn't roll off the tongue.
No, it's sometimes a little tough, but you know, what are you going to do? So to everybody, like I said, online, who's sent us some really well wishes, appreciate it. We're going to keep trying to do this, so we'll find some time next week. You know, keep giving us calls and emails. We'll respond to them in kind. I'm going to try to find us another guest for next week. But with that, let's kind of roll on out. This is Jay saying we'll see you next time.